Hi everyone, I'm Daniela, and you're listening to the Pet Vet Exchange, a podcast by Mella.
One, two, three, four!
Today we talk to Holly Truitt, who has been a veterinary technician in Austin for 8 years. They have a special interest in behavior and training, and they are advocates of husbandry and veterinary care for all pets. We chat about how to best prepare your pet for the vet, before the visit, during the visit, and after the visit as well. Hey everyone, I'm Daniela from Mella Pet Care, and today I'm joined by Holly. They are such a special guest because Holly has been a veterinary technician in Austin for 8 whole years, and they have a special interest in behavior and training. Not only that, but they also advocate for husbandry, veterinary care for all pets, fearful, anxious, stressed, happy, you name it. So honestly, that they are all over the place, which is so fantastic. And Holly, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to get to talk to y'all.
Fantastic. So before we begin and kind of dive into our topics, I would love if you could just give a little bit of personal background for the listeners.
Yeah. So like you said, I am a veterinary technician. I'm actually a behavior technician. So I right now work with a resident trained behavior vet. So I'm doing behavior kind of 24/7 in my career right now. I'm also human animal bond certified. I'm low stress handling certified, cat friendly certified. I also am an elite fear free professional, and I actually won this year's Fear Free Veterinary Technician of the Year award. I'm deep in fear free. I became fear free certified around like 2017, and really my passion just kind of grew from there. Kind of like you said, I'm really here for the pets who are fearful and stressed. And you know, every pet deserves vet care, and every pet deserves to be listened to. So I feel like my passion is really just to help all of those pets feel like they are being listened to, at the vet when they receive their care.
I love that. I think that's great. I know a lot of veterinarians and even pet parents too just kind of assume that, you know, if you take your pet to the vet and they are more stressful or they're more anxious, that suddenly it's like the problem child, right? It's like my cat has to be put in the burrito, or you know, the cat has to be put in like the panini press method.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Or, you know, it brings stress to everybody of like, oh, well, they're terrible at the vet, so maybe I don't go. Yeah. Or maybe I go, but you know, my heart rate is at 200 the whole time because I don't know how my pet's going to react. So this is just going to be a great conversation about helping to, you know, get rid of some of the stigma and stereotypes around that and just kind of dive into, you know, how to make the pet vet experience as best as possible for our stressful pets. So before we really begin, let's, you know, split up this podcast episode into a couple of buckets. So we'll go, you know, pre-vet visit, during vet visit, and then post vet visit. So to really start off, you know, how can pet parents, before they've even taken their pet to the vet, choose the best vet for their pet? That's a lot of like pet vet, you know, rhyming things going on here. So hopefully we don't get tripped up during this episode.
Yeah, that is such an essential part of all of this, is like choosing your vet. And I would say, similar to, you know, whenever we are looking for care for ourselves, you know, you're like looking on websites, you're looking up bios, you're kind of trying to see someone that you feel like you have a personal connection with. I really recommend that for your vets as well. So going on their websites and not just looking at like the feel of the website, but looking for individual vets. So oftentimes when you start looking up individual veterinarians on a website, they will give like special interests or things that, you know, they're passionate about, maybe things that they did in residency in the past. So you can start to find vets who are kind of have the same niche interest that maybe your pet needs. So maybe you have like a geriatric pet and you find a vet who says like they have a special interest in, you know, end of life care or things like that, right? So sometimes trying to go onto the vet's actual page and find what they're interested in can help to kind of make a cohesive visit for your pet also. So sometimes a vet may say like, I'm interested in behavior or I'm fear-free or things like that. So, you know, like, okay, if I do have a stressed out pet, this is probably a vet who's going to have a little bit more experience or like compassion in that area. And then similarly, kind of going beyond that, you can also ask to do like meet and greet sessions. So that is something that you probably will have to pay an exam fee for. Like, you know, we're taking the doctor's time. There may be a fee associated with that. But also having a visit where you can just go sit down with that vet. They can like toss your pet some treats. It's very like hands off, but we're just kind of getting to know each other can also be a great way to help choose the best vet for your pet and for your family. So that, you know, we're kind of all making sure we're on the same page before we go forward with care.
Yeah, no, these are great points, especially because I know a lot of pet parents pick their vets based solely on location. They're like, okay, I live here. Let's put in, you know, vets near me. Oh, there's one in the corner. I'm going there. Or like, you know, oh, they don't have any available appointments, but the other vet that's on the other corner does. Great, I'll go. So it's, you know, a great idea to say, okay, well, you know, location sure is a factor because you don't want to drive 2 hours, but it's also kind of a vibe check almost, making sure that you're okay with your vets. So when you do these meet and greets, also, what do you think are some questions that you should ask on top of just, you know, do I mend with this person well?
So I think that you can go over like a brief history maybe of your pet, especially if your pet has had previous surgeries, like diagnoses, like we have, you know, a senior pet who maybe has multiple issues going on or is, you know, stressed or fearful at the vet. You can discuss any of those things and kind of gauge like comfort level with the vet. Another thing that I would say kind of side note is I really recommend staying with the same vet if you can. I think oftentimes, you know, how you were talking about location and like this one's close or, you know, just right around the corner. Even within a practice, continuing to stay with the same vet over and over again can help with the quality of care that you're receiving. So I think another question that you could ask, you know, is what is that vet's schedule? How often are they going to be available for you? So you can, I mean, obviously emergencies happen, right? And you will have to go to whichever vet you can. But kind of knowing their schedule and their flow so that you can try and stick with them as much as possible, I think is also helpful.
Yeah, that's also a great point because I think, you know, in human medicine, there's almost this ex expectation that you stay with the same doctor. And so, you know, if you call into a clinic, they're like, okay, yeah, your doctor's available, or no, your doctor's not available. In vet medicine, it's interesting that you call the clinic and they say, oh, do you care who your vet is? A lot of the times it's like, you know, whoever's available, they'll just slot you in with them. But then, of course, you know, they don't know you, or maybe you've seen them a couple of times and suddenly you just kind of rotate through the whole hospital, but nobody knows your pet that well. So it's always a good idea to, yeah, to stick with one.
And every vet, you know, practices a little bit differently, the same way every doctor practices, or, you know, like human doctor practices a little differently. So if you have a pet that has a chronic issue going on, you can start to see like variations in the treatment plan because of who you're seeing. And I'm not saying one is right or wrong, but sticking with a particular treatment plan in a particular way that a doctor works is probably best.
Yeah, or else it gets very confusing. Then it's like, wait, which plan do I follow?
Well, this doctor said to do this. This doctor said to do that.
Yeah, a complete mess. Yeah. So that's fantastic. I love that in terms of just, you know, the po pre-visit, finding your vet, deciding who's right for you. So now then, the next step is, you know, getting to that vet visit. How do you think you can best prepare for the day of the vet visit? How can you help your pet with stress, you know, other ways to just make sure that they're all good and happy by the time you reach the vet's office?
So a few things. One is if your vet can send you paperwork ahead of time, fill that out for sure. That's easier for everyone, but also can shorten the amount of time that you are actually in the hospital because you've taken care of some of it beforehand. I would also say giving instructions beforehand as well. So if you know, my pet is going to be reactive in the lobby, I'm going to wait in the car until my room is ready, things like that. You can go ahead and start giving those tidbits to the vet and just to the staff in general, so to make it as smooth as possible. And then there's other more practical things like making sure that you leave in a good amount of time and don't rush. A lot of pets are not used to being in the car. And then, if like me, you live in a city and everyone's driving crazy, you're like weaving in and out of traffic, having to slam on your brakes. Those things can add to the stress of the entire vet experience. And then you can also prepare by bringing a lot of your own things. So bringing multiple treats that that your pet really likes to take at different kind of value, so really yummy stuff, maybe deli meat or cheese, all the way down to maybe just some of their normal kibble that they normally eat. You can also bring like blankets and toys. We can kind of talk about how those can be used a little bit later on, but bringing stuff that smells like them that they're used to is also really helpful. And then a not as fun thing, but something that's still very important is bringing your own samples, especially for annual visits. So oftentimes, along with your pet's yearly heartworm test or blood work, things like that, they're also going to ask for like a stool sample or a urine sample. And so these are things that if you collect them at home, then your pet isn't having to be like probed and prodded and have so many invasive things done because you've supplied them yourself. So, when you're picking up your pet's poop or just doing normal stuff that morning, trying to collect those samples for the vet, can also be helpful in many ways in getting you out the door of the vet faster and also having less stress for what your pet has to go through that day, just kind of in general.
Yeah, I like that. I like the kind of just anticipating it so that you don't show up just completely clueless, especially, there's a lot of either behavioral things or, changes in your pet's health that sometimes you'll notice it, and then as soon as you arrive at the vet clinic, you forget about it. The vet will be like, "Oh, how was your pet's, stool over the last few weeks?" And you'll say, "Oh, totally fine." And then you go home and you remember they had diarrhea the week before and the week before that. So you're like, "Why didn't I say any of that? Like, how did I forget?" So,
Absolutely.
yeah, good to write it all down. Good to just have it at the top of mind. And then how about, because I know a lot of pet parents who are very afraid of taking their cats to the vet because they think they're going to be fractious, they're going to need that little blanket burrito. Do you have any, words of advice or like lack of stress for them?
Man, I love cats. I'm a big cat person, and cats definitely need their own kind of separate regimen for how to get ready for vet visits. One huge part of getting ready for the vet, for cats in particular, is their carriers. So oftentimes we have a carrier that maybe was from your pet, three pets ago. It's been living in the garage for, 5 years and hasn't been used. It's got cobwebs, it's rusted bolts, things like that. And then we're like, oh crap, we need to go to the vet. We got to pull this out and shove our cat in this really quick. So making sure that you have a carrier that is large enough for your cat so they can stand up, completely turn around if they need to, they've got enough space to maneuver is very important. It's also important to have a carrier that can be easily disassembled if we need it to be. So pulling your cat out of their carrier is a very stressful experience. And if we can, we don't want to do that. So having what's called a hard shell carrier, right? So one of those kind of thick plastic carriers that unbuckles, it doesn't screw, it's got buckles on it. Those buckles can just easily be snapped and removed, and the top half of that carrier can come off, is a great way to help keep your cat comfortable during the vet visit. Oftentimes we can even examine them just in the bottom of that carrier. And if you put in that carrier blankets that smell like them as well, or cover their carrier with blankets that smell like them, kind of block some of the visuals of being in the car or at the vet. That's also very helpful in keeping them as least stressed as possible during their visit.
Yeah, I love the carriers that pop off the top. The worst is, the vet goes in and it's like, "Okay, well, you're the pet parent. I think the pet would be more comfortable if you take them out of the carrier, right?" And they take the carrier, they just rotate it and just shake it, and the cat just falls through. Like, that's terrible. What a horrible sight to visit.
And having a carrier, like I said, that makes it easier to be taken apart versus because you know, at some points, techs feel like that's their only option, right? They're like, I can't get the carrier apart, the cat won't come out of the carrier. Now we're either having to pull or plop them out of the carrier, you know, things like that. So having a carrier that fits well and can be disassembled is huge for your pet and also the staff as well, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So great. So now, okay, we found our vet. We've entered the vet clinic. We've started the vet visit. Once you're there, how can you, advocate for your pet as a pet parent throughout the duration of your visit?
So I think once you get there, and this is maybe you've kind of achieved this in some of our other steps if you've gone and done, you know, a meet and greet or things like that. But oftentimes, staff will tell you, like, yeah, just come into the lobby, hang out, right? And you get into the lobby, and there's like five other dogs and cats. Everyone's panting or barking or, you know, whining. Staff is moving around. It's very chaotic. So even just before you actually physically enter that building, asking, you know, maybe calling and being like, hey, I'm here. What's the situation? What does it look like inside the vet? You know, is the room ready for my pet? And if not, you can start your advocating by just even waiting in your car if your pet's comfortable there until their room is ready and they can go directly into it. So we're not having to like wait in the lobby, and kind of build that anticipation and that stress. And then from there, I would say, you know, one of the things that you can do to advocate the most for your pet is also monitoring signs of like stress and fear and discomfort and telling the staff, like, hey, if my pet exhibits X, Y, or Z, I would like for us to stop and reformulate a game plan, right? So not everything has to happen today if we've planned well. Maybe, you know, we come back at a later date to finish things out or something like that. But so giving the staff kind of these guidelines of when I'd like for you to touch base with me, when I would like for you to maybe stop and reassess, maybe when I would like for you to have a conversation with me about how to move forward. That is one of the biggest ways to advocate for your pet. And I know not everyone is comfortable, you know, having that conversation face to face. And that's where maybe you can say those things in a written statement while filling out paperwork beforehand, or right? Like you can set some of these expectations without having to like look someone in the eye and say that if that makes you feel confrontational or a bit nervous. So whether that's verbally there the day of or kind of in some of your pre-screening stuff, I think discussing some of these like stop points, expectations for the day or for what you plan to receive or what you're willing for your pet to tolerate is one of the maybe most nerve-wracking, but also best things that you can do in advocating for your pet while they're at the vet.
Yeah, no, those are great points. And this is not a promotional podcast in the slightest, but and I've never promoted the Mella products, but now I feel like just kind of sliding in the mention is a great idea because we made an underarm thermometer for that reason.
Yes.
Pet parents are so uncomfortable, obviously for good reason, that their pet has to get their rectal temperature done. And it's kind of like, this line has been crossed, but at the same time, as a pet parent, you don't want to say, hey, don't do that. Because we all know, temperature is a very important thing to have. That vital sign reading is a great measure and indication of a pet's overall health. So, great thing to have in terms of data, but the actual method is so terrible. And so, no pet wants that. No pet parent wants it. And then even, as a vet tech or assistant who has to, take the temperature, you also are not enjoying yourself. So no one likes it, but everyone does like, the final number. So it's just always, just kind of a tricky situation.
And I think that also knowing from previous experience what your pet doesn't like the most can be helpful too. So being like, hey, that temperature is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. Can we save it for last? Right. Or like being, you know, saying like he's had ear infections in the past. He's really sensitive with his ears. Can you do that last? Or, you know, just kind of giving them a helpful flow of maybe what are going to be the most stressful things so that they can navigate them gently, they can save them for last. Or if they feel that it's not medically relevant, not do it at all, right? And then I would say, lastly for advocating is you yourself have to know the signs of like fear and stress and discomfort in order to advocate for your pet. So I think frequently as pet parents, we know the big signs, right? They're trembling, they're cowering, they're hiding, and we go like, oh, they're stressed. But oftentimes we have not practiced a lot of the nuances of behavior, like they're licking their lips, they're averting their gaze, they're not taking a treat when they normally would. And so noticing and getting comfortable with those small signs of stress so that you can see them building while at the vet and go, okay, I see where this is going. My pet is getting too stressed. We need a break. We need to change plans is really helpful. So I think that would be my little bit of like pet parent homework is there's some great websites like even fearfreehappyhomes.com is made for pet parents. And on there, they've got great, cute little infographics for a bunch of different signs of like, comfortability and stress, knowing when your dog is happy and when they're showing other emotions. So I think that we ourselves have to like get comfortable with all of those little minute signs and changes in body language so that we know how to advocate the best for our pets.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it's like, different pets show stress in different ways. So, just being able to know how your own pet acts, same way with behavior. They always say, okay, changes in behavior are a sign of either pain or stress, but you have to know the baseline, of course. Some pets are, active when they're happy and not active when they're sad or vice versa. So it's really, pet dependent. And
Absolutely.
so, this is great for advocating. Are there any more tips then on minimizing the stress of the pet during the visit, whether, that's during some very necessary procedures like getting those vaccines that you just really can't get out of and other required procedures?
Yeah, so I would say if you can have your pet stay with you. And once again, maybe this is written down pre-questionnaire, just like I would like my pet to remain with me whenever possible. Maybe that is you in the moment when they say like, "Hey, we're going to take Fluffy to the back now and finish everything out." And you go, "Actually, I would just prefer for them to stay with me." But keeping your pet with you is also something you can do to advocate. Imagine if you had like a 3-year-old, and then the doctor said, "Okay, we're gonna go take them to the back and give them their shots," right? A parent would be like, "No, you're not. My child is gonna stay with me." And so oftentimes you are the one comfort, you're the one constant in a space where they don't know anybody, everything is unfamiliar, and we're doing stuff like injections or temperature taking, which is very odd, uncomfortable, and painful. And as our pets get older and they have arthritis and we're moving them around, that can be painful as well. So I would say, if at all possible, keep your pet with you. Oftentimes, vet staff has this not great kind of idea that when they take the pet away from the parent, the pet does better. When really, what's happening is the pet is just shutting down, right? They're just saying, the one person who I felt comfortable voicing my concerns to, whether that was hiding, growling, cowering, whatever, I felt comfortable at least expressing myself with my parent. And now that I'm taken away, I don't feel comfortable anymore. So now I'm just going to kind of freeze. And to a lot of untrained staff, that can seem like compliance, but it's not. So even if your pet is doing things in the room, like trying to get away, maybe being vocal, like growling, at least they're feeling comfortable to express themselves and to say those things. Whereas without you, they may not feel comfortable, doing that. So that's another big thing. There's other small things you can do, like injections are no fun, right? No one likes to get poked. You can actually buy lidocaine cream on like chewy.com. It is, I do think you have to get it prescribed through your vet, but that's something that like you can apply to spots where your pet is going to get blood drawn or vaccines done, and that can help numb the sensation of injection. So that's something that you can talk to with your vet about if your pet is a, specifically or especially sensitive to injections. You can also do things like put them in thunder shirts or thunder caps. Some people try nutraceutical things at home, but certainly if your vet has recommended pharmaceuticals, so what Fear Free calls PVPs or pre-visit pharmaceuticals, just meds to take to help them remain calm at the vet, then definitely give those. You can also do things like Just go to YouTube and play white noise on your phone or something during the exam or while you're waiting. That way you're not hearing all of the commotion outside of the door. You know, you can kind of muffle sound some. And then yeah, just making sure you have those treats, those toys, those blankets, those comforting things as well.
I love those tips, especially yeah, the one about, you know, keeping your pet with you, because I've heard so many pet parents say, "Oh, my pet does better when I'm not in the room. So I'm just going to step out, take a phone call, get a coffee, you know, do what you will with Fido. I'll be back in 30 minutes." So I'm so glad you mentioned that so that, you know, people can kind of reevaluate their reactions to that and realize, "Oh, okay, you know, my dog is growling or my cat is hissing. I'm going to stay with them and comfort them."
Yeah, and maybe that's, you know, if we've planned well and, you know, we're advocating for our pet, then we start getting curious about that and being like, well, why? Why are they doing that? What does that mean? Because to me, that's a pet who's now starting to show signs of a discomfort level that makes me think there needs to be intervention instead of just kind of pushing through it, doing the burrito wrap, you know, muzzling, you know, and I am pro muzzle, but you know, instead of just kind of pushing through these things, we need to start getting curious about why is this happening and what does it mean if we just keep going, right? What does next year's visit look like? What does the visit 5 years from now look like if we've just continued to kind of push through these things and just hope that our pet only has to go to the vet once a year, you know? So I know that oftentimes going to the vet's just something we're ticking off on our list of, you know, annual stuff to do for the year, but the more that we can really invest in the time and in making it a good experience, the better payoff we're going to have in the long run, and the less time we're going to have to put in once things, you know, start going south because we've had so many bad experiences in the past.
Yeah, I love all of these tips. They've been great. And so, you know, now let's just say, oh, you know, our hypothetical vet visit went great. We were great advocates. Our pets were not that stressed. So now we're going home. And, you know, your average pet parent really does only go to the vet once a year, twice a year. But how, you know, how would you say that pet parents should really prepare between vet visits to, you know, really be successful for the next one and not show up not having a clue what to do?
So I think, you know, I just said I am a muzzle advocate, and I certainly am. So one of the things that you can do is muzzle train your dog. I think all dogs should be muzzle trained, regardless of if they really need it or not while they're at the vet, because you never know if something traumatic to them may happen. They break a leg, and now all of a sudden they're incredibly painful and they need to be muzzled for their own safety, for, you know, the staff safety. And this is a tool that they've never seen before in their entire life. Now, if you have a pet who is moderately or severely stressed at the vet, then they should certainly be muzzle trained. And they should be muzzle trained with a basket muzzle. So I am really into the muzzles right now from Muzzle Movement. They are these big, pretty, kind of bulky, but super cute basket muzzles that you can easily feed treats through. Your pet can pant in them, they can drink water in them. So looking into stuff like Muzzle Movement or the Muzzle Up Project can help you to identify good muzzles, how to get your pet used to them. But oftentimes, a pet who is muzzled is going to require less restraint or less handling than one who is, right? If a dog is muzzled, I don't really need to put as many hands on them because I'm no longer worried that they can bite me, right? So oftentimes, a muzzle is a great tool just so we can be more hands-off at the vet, right? So whether it's just for an, you know, OMG situation or for chronic use, I think every pet should be muzzle trained. I think that you should take note of what they did not like while you were at the vet and then be like, how can I work on that until the next visit? So maybe it was the poke, right? Maybe it was they really hated those injections. So being like, cool, it, you know, can we do some sort of like training or care to practice, you know, what or mimic what pokes will look like so my pet doesn't just have it happen once a year and it's the worst thing ever? Did they really not like the restraint? You know, can I work on, you know, handling or touching them at home in a way that will mimic the vet so that once again it's not just, you know, once a year? Or toenails. Every pet hates toenail trims, right? So how can I work on that in between vet visits? And then lastly, you can ask your vet if they'll allow what Fear Free calls happy visits or victory visits. People have other names for them, but they're typically either these free or very low cost visits that are, usually quick 5, 10, 15 minutes, and you're just doing stuff like going into the vet, feeding some treats and leaving. Maybe you go into an exam room and somebody, you know, gives your pet some scritches on the chin or something like that. But it's very low stakes, and it's all about being positive and stress-free so that, you know, when that year annual does come around and they have to be poked with four vaccines and they have to have their blood drawn and be looked at, that's not the one experience that they've had that year with their vet. They've had some other good experiences in their trust bucket, as we say, so that when you do have to pull out of that trust bucket with a negative experience, we're not pulling into nothing. There's been some good visits as well. I know that's not practical. Not everybody lives in a place where their vet is easily accessible or has the space for, you know, one of these visits. But if they do, then it can be a game changer for their care going forward.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I also love that you mentioned that, muzzles are, they're not negative things. I know a lot of people think of it that way, where you're, constraining your pet. But the fact that they now make them in cute colors and that they can be fun and they can be a good way to train your pet to be less stressed, it's great. I think, we're definitely changing the narrative from, what was it, Lady and the Tramp, where I think that's
Yes.
what everyone first watched and was like, wow, this is terrible. Like, the pound people are like collecting the pets and putting muzzles on them, and it's a, tense scene. But now it's a little bit different. So I love to see how everything is changing. And it's actually our perfect segue into our Mela signature question. So I think over 100 guests have answered this question, which is super cool because everyone has such a different perspective and answer for this. But for you, what does pet health and wellness mean in today's day and age?
So I think you could probably guess from my passion with behavior and everything we've talked about today, but for me, health and wellness has to do not only with their physical well-being, but their mental well-being as well. Both, you know, while they're just snuggled up in your home and when they're at the vet as well. So, you know, I often think if we have helped their physical health but harmed their mental health, have we really helped them at all? Right? Was that a good experience for their life? So to me, it's integrating both their physical and their mental well-being and realizing that you can't focus on one without the other. They're integrative, they're together. And so we really have to do better as advocates for our pets, as you know, veterinary professionals of being just as mindful with their mental health as we are with their physical health. So I think that that's what wellness means to me.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And we'll definitely see that in the future. It used to be that vet clinics were these like very sterile, like metallic, gross places where you would take your pet in, they'd get prodded, and then you left. And now it's, this with the free movement and clinics that are a lot more modern and welcoming. We're seeing that. So that's great answer. And Holly, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up this episode, but it has been a great chat. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun getting to talk about my passions.
Thank you all for listening, and make sure to check out the show notes for all links to everything mentioned in this episode. Head over to www.mela.ai to learn more about what's happening over here at Mela Pet Care and for more ways to keep your pet healthy and happy. And don't forget to check out the Pet Vet Exchange on LinkedIn and Instagram today.